All right, we're going to bring the court to order this morning. Welcome to our Commissioner's Court. And as everyone is seated, is there someone here this morning who would volunteer to do our opening invocation, starting off our year? Yes, would you? Thank you. Let's all stand together, if you would, please. And then we'll do our pledges immediately following.
Heavenly Father, we come into your presence, Father. We are praising your name, and we're thanking you for being in charge of everything, Father, for being on your throne. Father, I just ask that this meeting today go efficiently and productively, that everything is presented articulately, Father. And Father, I just ask that there's honesty, integrity, and that our hearts and minds are open to ideas, new thoughts, new presentations, Father. I just ask for safety for everyone here in the court. And I just ask for wisdom, guidance, discernment. In Jesus' mighty name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. So we say our pledges together, first to the American flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Texas flag.
Honor Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you, and you may be seated. This morning, let the record reflect that all are present this morning. And gentlemen, do I have a motion to approve the court agenda today? We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. At this time, we have an opportunity for our citizens to come forward as it relates to items on our agenda, either in consent or in open. I want to remind you that we give you the opportunity to speak for 3 minutes. If you're going to approach the bench with any documentation, please get permission before you do. And as you come up, identify yourself for the record. So who will be first in our citizens to come? Yes, if you would please.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Judge.
Morning.
Morning.
It's good to see you. I'm coming to you today to talk to you about children.
I don't mean to be rude.
This is COVID. It's about COVID, and it's on the agenda.
What kind of emergency management? Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
That's fine.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
So I want to talk to you about children getting injected.
You identify yourself. Okay.
Excuse me?
Identify yourself once again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Susan Scruggs.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it.
Sure. I'm discussing the issues that are happening in the county with regard to recommending, discussing, posting on Facebook injections for the children. They're not really vaccines, so I'm not calling them a vaccine. Right now, Omicron is bursting, and people are being infected on cruise ships. I know at least 40 individuals who have been infected with Omicron. They had a runny nose, a little fever, felt sluggish for a couple of days. It's not a big deal. My 3 grandchildren have not been subjected to it. They're in schools. Children don't get it. I want to bring forth a letter that was just done. It's an open letter to the president of Cornell University, and what it points out, it's from the faculty, students, and staff, is that they have a mandate for vaccinations for their students and faculty and staff. There have been 1,600 outbreaks of COVID cases within the last month. The vaccine is obsolete. Here's another headline. The vaccine is obsolete for Omicron. It doesn't work. There are outbreaks everywhere. So why have a vaccine mandate for in the county? Why post things on Facebook about the children being injected? Children are being hurt by this. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons have sent a letter
to all the universities and colleges saying, do not mandate the vaccine for your students. Dr. Ben Carson has said, do not mandate vaccines for children. It's hurting them. It's maiming them. Three of our babies have died. When I say our, I'm talking about in our nation. They have died since October 29th when they approved its emergency use authorization. It is not FDA approved.
Susan, if I just for a moment, if I may pause the time. We're on the same page with you. We are not mandating.
Okay, then stop posting things about injections for children on the Montgomery County Public Health Department Facebook.
How does that issue us making a mandate? But we'll talk. I'll talk to you afterwards.
It's going. I mean,
this is not noticed.
NAHL has issued level 3 for the school. I don't want mandates or masks on our children. I do not want it.
Hear, hear.
I will not put up with it.
Hear, hear.
You will have a big fight on your hands.
There's
a lot of people. You mandate vaccines or mandate
your
masks.
Your time is up, Susan.
Okay.
And we stand arm in arm in agreement with you.
Okay.
Just so you know. Who will be next that will come up? Yes. Former Judge Craig Doyle. I think we need to give him a round of applause.
I appreciate that. Actually, I won that last election, Judge. I'm free.
We're changing our voting machines.
What'd I tell you? The most votes doesn't mean you win, right? I just realized this is the first time I've been here in 3 years, and I realize now how much I don't miss it. It's kind of exciting. But I know you guys are I'm here to talk about item 17B, the radios, and I know you guys are going to defer that, but I got up this morning and put a coat on, so I'm going to go ahead and say what I'm going to say. But just to kind of give you a historical perspective on the radios, and I've got a lot of good friends in the fire suppression business and the ESD boards, and have always been, and I think they'll back me up on that, a huge supporter of the ESDs and firefighters. But back in 2008, 2009, I guess, when we had, as you're familiar with, some of the unfunded mandates that the legislature hands down at times, which what you have to deal with, and we did at that time, was to have interoperability for our radios.
Right.
So at that time, we were about at the end of life in some of our radios. We thought, well, it's time to go ahead and upgrade our system, which left a lot of the ESDs in a situation where they used our radio system but didn't have funding for radios at that time. So the court felt obligated to fund those radios for the ESDs at that time, and we did, with the idea that going forward, they would need to budget for that as those radios reach their end of life cycle,
right,
moving forward, and fund those radios whenever they needed to. So, we've already done this once before. I'd hate to see the county spend $4.7 million in funding that I know the commissioners could use for roads. I know there's some dire needs coming up for an expansion of the jail and forensic facilities and a whole lot of other things. All due respect to the ESDs and the firefighters that are in the trenches, and I think those guys deserve all the help we can give them. But that was an issue that at that time we were in full agreement, all parties, that we would fund them, and then going forward they would continue to fund those radios as they needed them. I saw where that item was on the executive session, and I'm no attorney, Amy or BD, but it seemed like an awful odd item. We were pretty particular, I remember when I was here, about items that were discussed in executive session.
That's why we also put it on the open.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on the open. I think they had a specific question about whether we could even do it and use, county funds for ESDs, another taxing entity, and what would be required. Whether we would need...
We did it in 2000.
Yeah.
BD, you were here then. Were you not here then?
Until 2013.
2013, okay. Yeah. Well, we did at that time fund those radios with the caveat that going forward that they would need to plan, for the future replacement of those radios. So just wanted to share a little historical perspective, from the past. So
we appreciate that, Judge.
I appreciate you.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks. Allow me the time.
For sure.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Good to see you.
Happy New
Bye.
Year.
Thank you, Judge.
Take care.
All right. Are there any other citizens that would like to make? Yes, ma'am. State your name for the record.
My name is Deborah Ferris, and I know I'm singing to the choir, but allow me my 3 minutes of fame here.
Absolutely.
I want my life back, Remember in the old days when you woke up with a runny nose, you had a cold, you had a fever, and you just stayed home for a couple of days and then went back to work? Well, now people wake up, I have a fever. They run and get tested for COVID. If they test positive, they're given medications that do not work, and this is my big complaint. We are not treating COVID. The medications that work are hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. In fact, I know the World Health Organization and the CDC have demonized, especially hydroxychloroquine, but it works. In fact, and I'm going to read this part, on August 22, 2005, Dr. Fauci published an article in the Virology Journal, which is the official publication of Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Health, which states that chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. The researchers state that chloroquine has strong antiviral effects on SARS infection. These inhibitory effects are observed when the cells are treated with the drug either before or after exposure to the virus. This means that Dr. Fauci has known for 15 years that chloroquine and its even milder derivative, hydroxychloroquine, will not only treat a current case of COVID, but will prevent future cases. So it works as both a cure and a vaccine. Was that my 3 minutes?
Oh, no, give it
Okay, Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Health in 2005 said chloroquine can effectively reduce the establishment of infection and spread of SARS. The government knows that hydroxychloroquine works, but doctors will not prescribe it. We've got to stop testing and stop vaccinating and start treating with medications that work at the first sign of infection. If we did this, COVID would be gone in 6 months. It's not the government's job to protect me from getting COVID by forcing me to submit to an injection which has proven side effects that the media will not disclose to the public. Everyone knows that the vaccinated can still catch and transmit COVID, so why would anyone put their health at risk by taking this so-called vaccine? And by the way, are we going to give boosters to the world every 6 months? If people are COVID scared, wear a mask, stay home, get vaccinated. I'm not. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah. We appreciate you sharing
that
with us. We have anyone else who would like to make public comment? Yes.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Lucetta, and I'm here to speak on item 12, Emergency Management A. And I see that there is the possibility of spending another $250,000 for COVID, and that's why I'm here.
You're on her time. I apologize. Go ahead.
Oh.
You're good. Okay.
Anyway, that's what brought me here. Another 250 potentially, another $250,000. That's absurd. So the CEC, the Commissioner's Court was made aware of Dr. Reiner Fomek's legal litigation on the COVID-19 fraud by the Omega Brief that you all heard at the last Commissioner's Court meeting. And Reiner Fomek, here's a quote from him. He said, the PCR test fraud and COVID-19 will be the case of the century. He said, we need a Nuremberg 2.0. And there is no pandemic. This is all about getting people to take the shot. I recommend you study this lawsuit well and the Omega Brief, which you received last time. So have any of you heard of Dr. Kerry Mullis? He is a Nobel Prize inventor of the PCR test who mysteriously died just before the pandemic in October of 2019. And he said, the PCR test was not made to detect any type of infectious disease. It was made for research, not for detection of disease. And during the early months of this coronavirus madness in 2019, clinical specimens were not readily available to developers of these SARS-CoV testing. So the FDA authorized the IVDs, which is... and I have something I can get the developers of it, based on available data, and they used contrived samples. Here is a definition of the word contrived. I'm sure we all know, but I thought it might be a good idea to remind us all. Contrived means artificial, false, fixed, engineered, manufactured, plotted, and schemed. So there was a CDC report, and I have papers here that I can give you, that the PCR test would be altered or pulled back December 31st. So now we're, what, a week into the new year. So the PCR test is the foundation of this planned pandemic, and the PCR test is a fraud. Wake up. We have been scammed on a global scale. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Is there anyone else who would like to make comments this morning? Yes, sir. If you come forward, please. State your name for the record and the topic.
Good morning. My name is Nathan Moxley. I'm the League Information Officer for the Montgomery Youth Sports Association. So I'm here to talk about an item on the consent agenda for Precinct 1, Item A.
Okay.
And I have some prepared notes. It's a little less heavy of a topic. I'm here to talk about baseball. Hopefully we all appreciate that. I'd like to speak about a dilemma that we're facing as a youth sports provider in our county, and I am seeking the county's support in overcoming this obstacle. Brief background on our organization's relationship with the county for those of you who may not be familiar. We are a nonprofit organization. We operate a charter from the Little League International. Our board of directors is 100% volunteer run, and we operate the day-to-day business of the league. Our practices and games are all held at the West Montgomery County Park, located in Precinct 2. However, our league has players that live in multiple precincts across the county. We have a usage agreement that allows us to utilize that park, but we maintain, repair, and take care of the utilities of the facility 100%. There are also two other organizations that operate in other areas of that property. I did notice that on the consent agenda that one of those other organizations did not complete and turn in their usage agreement. Over the last 4 years, our registration numbers have grown in excess of 120%, from just over 300 registered players in 2017 to 667 this year, and that is without our junior and senior players who won't be applying until after high school tryouts are finished. We have also maintained one of the lowest registration fees for organized baseball in the Houston area while making tremendous upgrades to our facility, including brand new dugouts, new electronic scoreboards, a boardroom, and a covered lit batting facility, all paid for by donations from our players. Currently, there are four baseball and one softball field that we utilize. Four baseball and one t-ball field that we utilize. These numbers may not mean anything in isolation, so for reference, the Orwell facility, the Oak Ridge Woodlands Area Little League, they have a usage agreement similar to ours, but they have approximately 900 players currently registered, and they have 10 fields at their facility. This is a difference of 90 players per field for them to 133 players per field for us. Due to this growth as an organization and the growth of our community, we have reached our capacity. At this point, we cannot even accommodate hosting practices at our facility once season starts. Our teams are forced to fend for themselves in acquiring space to practice, leaving them with a less than positive experience for youth baseball. What we need right now is an additional quad facility of four fields with central concession and restrooms immediately. There is space available at the park to accommodate this, but we call on county leadership to assist us in providing this facility for our citizens. We would like time on the next agenda to discuss this matter further.
Thank you for bringing that to us.
Thank you.
Commissioner. Yeah, just quickly because it's not noticed.
Well, Nathan, we've talked about it and it's been brought to my attention.
Yes, sir.
Matter of a lot of money, which we can, let's talk about this. You know.
That's all we want is a discussion.
Yeah,
and finding out that the Girls Softball Association didn't fill out their agreement with the county, there's other opportunities other than building new facilities that
right.
we may be able to utilize.
Yeah. Well,
if you guys should get together on that.
Let's talk about it. We'll get with Cliff and we'll figure this out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it so much. All right. Are there any other citizens who'd like? Yes.
My Morning, Judge. Good morning, Commissioners. How are you? Happy New Year. I'm Cindy Phillips, and I am a resident of Montgomery County, and I'm going to discuss an item on the agenda under emergency management that reads, and I quote, consider, discuss, and take appropriate action, including immediate action, due to the imminent threat to public health and safety as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. I felt like when I read this, I felt like I was in Groundhog Day a little bit. But so I just want to remind the court that, and anybody that is listening, that a little known fact that might have gotten missed a year ago is that the World Health Organization lowered the cycle thresholds for the PCR test on a magical day, January 20th of 2021. Does anybody remember what happened on January 20th of 2021?
Yeah.
We saw a new administration be inaugurated. So I just thought it might be a happenstance, but magically the numbers of cases of COVID drastically decreased for a little while. And the way that the PCR test works, and I'm not a scientist, and I don't pretend to understand it all, but I understand that it is not a diagnostic test, but it is a test that is used in research labs, and that it runs, it can be manipulated, because you run it at one cycle, you can run it at a higher cycle, it runs closer to the 60 cycles per whatever, it detects anything and everything. If you lower that, if you lower it as the World Health Organization did, it detects very little. So I just want to just remind everybody to keep in mind that there does seem to be some type of narrative being driven nationwide, worldwide, to keep fear going. Numbers of cases. Yet we see maybe an increase in numbers of cases with this Omicron, but the numbers of hospitalizations and deaths are not up. Yet in 2021, now that we look back and can see things, the insurance agency has now, the life insurance agency has taken a look, and I can send you with documentation. There has been a 40% increase in deaths of ages 18 to 64, 40% increase of majority of the non-COVID deaths. You have to ask yourself, yes, there was probably a much higher rate of suicide, et cetera, because of the lockdowns. But that leads us to question, what is causing these numbers of deaths that are non-COVID? I will send you guys the information. It is not one little article. It is multiple articles, and it is straight-up data. So we just have to ask ourselves and to remind ourselves to not get caught up in hysteria, and we need to get back to life as normal. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Cindy, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming and sharing with us. All right, is there anyone else who would like to come and share with us? All right, if there's not, then let's move forward.
Right there.
Oh, where? I'm sorry, forgive me. Please come forward.
Hi, I'm Tina Orbaugh, and I'm only here to ask a few questions. I don't know. We have a lot of information. PCR tests don't work. All this information, y'all are on our side. We all need to work together. Together we can get all of this looked at. I want to know is what can we do to stop the mandates? You say you all are with us with the mandates, but what are we doing to stop the mandates? What are we doing to stop these people from spreading false information? And that's all we're trying to do is give you information. And I don't know where you are as far as commissioners, what you can do, what you can't do. But my one question is, I hope we can all work together to get something done so that we don't have mandates. And that's where if we're all on the same team, then we got to do something about it. That's it. Thank you.
Tina, thank you very much. Appreciate it. So any other comments? All right. If there are no other comments, then we'll move to proclamations and resolutions. Montgomery County Historical Commission presentation. Larry Forrester. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Judge Keogh and members of Commissioner's Court. It's always a pleasure to be here and see your smiling faces. For the benefit of the people in the audience and that may be viewing, each year our County Historical Commission is urged by the
Can
Texas...
Can you all hear that? Is that coming out of the microphone?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking maybe a little closer. Maybe it's just me. Everybody knows I'm hard of hearing.
Each year, the Texas Historical Commission requests that their county historical commissions, all 254, make a presentation to their commissioners' court as to the annual activities of the county historical commission, and that's what I'm here for today. You have in front of you the 15-page annual report that captures, in summary, the activities of our county historical commission this last year. And I'm not going to spend much time on any of this other than to say, at your reading pleasure, invite you to look at that. I put a lot of pictures in here because if you're like me, I'm a more visual person than I am looking at the details. A couple of the highlights, though, that I wanted to mention to you was that we now have a team of individuals who are working under our guidance to do historical resource surveys on all the old structures, historical significant structures here in Montgomery County. We're starting here in Conroe, obviously, and they're up to about 80 or so buildings. This is something that, again, the Historical Commission, the State Historical Commission, urges all counties to do. The last time this was done was 42 years ago in 1980. So it's time to renew it, and the individuals with the Church of Latter-day Saints serving as volunteers are doing a terrific job on that. And when all that information is there, I'm sure it'll be on not only our website, that is the County Historical Commission website, but the City of Conroe's indicated they want something like that, and probably the other cities around as well. We have a youth advisory board. The year before last, it wasn't very active. This past year, I'm pleased to say we've done a number of things. They participated in a number of events, including just recently a tombstone cleaning project that we did at Oakwood Cemetery, and we do this at various cemeteries every year around the county. We also, in conjunction with another organization that I happen to be chairman of, the Friends of the Flag Foundation, we produced and helped fund the creation of what is called the activity book for the Lone Star Monument and Historical Flag Park, and I've given you a copy of that. Mm-hmm. This is designed for fourth grade students who are taking Texas history, or seventh grade students for that matter, that may be taking Texas history, not only in our county, but is my time up?
No, you're not on time. Proceed. Okay.
We get a little gun shy here after everyone else. But
timer's going off everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. What this is designed to do is to introduce two things. It introduces the children around the state to the fact that Montgomery County is the birthplace of the Lone Star Flag. And, of course, we have in Conroe the Lone Star Monument Historical Flag Park, which is in itself an educational outdoor museum.
Right.
So we're trying to get this in the hands as money allows, in all the fourth grade students' hands, and we've also put it on our website. So anyone in any part of the state, any teacher, can use this as this activity book, can print it off or print pages off and use it as part of their curriculum for teaching about Texas history, specifically the Texas Revolution, pre- and post-Texas Revolution. So we're very proud of this. A lot of the credit goes to the Friends of the Flag Foundation, but a number of us have also been involved in the compilation of the information and the presentation of this and getting it out to as many people around the state, for that matter, around the world, as might be interested in this history.
Have we gotten that to the schools?
Well, we are slowly getting there. Now, the problem is these books cost just under $3 each, so there's a limited number of funds that we have, and we've delivered some right now to a lot of the private schools. In fact, one of our members, Robin Bartlett, has delivered them to one of the private schools, Sacred Heart School, and I've delivered them to some of the private schools. We've also put them in the library. So every one of the county libraries have these books in all seven of the libraries around the county. The goal is, over time, is to get these available to students. We have a number of sponsors that have helped us with that, including Spirit of Texas Bank, the Spikes Group, and Buckaloo Chevrolet, and there's many others that are referenced on about the third page of the book that are sponsors that have helped us with this, Gullo, HEB, and so forth. But we think this is an exciting prospect that allows our students, particularly since we're not too far away from the in the next decade from the 200th anniversary of the Texas Revolution, and which led up to the Lone Star Flag, to have these things available. So there's a lot of projects we do. I could spend a lot of time talking about each and every one of them.
Can I ask you a couple questions about some of the stuff in your report?
Certainly.
First of all, you ought to have these to go out to everybody who moves into Montgomery County from out of the county or from out of state.
Sure.
At information centers or real estate places or whatever. Just a thought. Second thing is, I have a question. We talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, we have some historic places that are destroyed. They have been destroyed. We know what was there. And are there plans to put historical markers at those places?
In the event that they are, if we have enough historical data, primary and secondary sources, in order to put together, compile a historical narrative to support a county or state historical marker, we can certainly do that.
You know, you got the 1911 Everett Hardware, the 1911 First State Bank of Conroe, and as you guys are redoing and as the repurposing of these buildings in the historical center in Conroe, would that be available for those kind of things?
We can put either state or county, and probably in that case county, historical markers there that would say at this site was, for example, Everett Hardware, which operated for 90 years, and give some of the narrative of that. Another site that needs to have a historical marker, and the work's already been done, is the old Conroe Industrial and Normal College, which is the Conroe College that some people know out there on 10th Street. So that way we're trying to capture our heritage. And what I'm finding, the book I've written, in fact, we just published another book on the city of Conroe that just came out last February. But what I find is that there is as many people, maybe more, fascinated about Montgomery County history that have just newly arrived in the county. Some of us who've lived here for many years sort of take our history for granted. But new people in any part of the county are fascinated to know more about what is Montgomery County. They're raising their children here. They want to know more about it.
You guys have certainly been busy this past year.
We appreciate it very much.
And I move on accepting the report.
Thank you very much.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for all you do.
Larry, thanks for all the work you've done. Appreciate it so much. All right. Thank you. As we move forward to item number 9 on our agenda, County Clerk, we have a motion to consider and approve Commissioner's Court minutes from both A and B on the agenda.
Move.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, as we approach the consent agenda, are there any modifications that anyone would like to make to the consent agenda?
I got one I need to move. On page 701, I need to move that to open for just a second.
Page 701?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to write that down here real quick.
I move with modification of moving 01 to open.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to approve the court consent agenda with modifications. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, thank you. Commissioner.
I need to move and change the effective date to the 22nd. Is that right, Amanda?
Yes, Commissioner. That's the first beginning of the pay period that contract will start.
Okay.
The new contract.
So the effective date will be January the 22nd. And I move.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, the next item on the agenda, under the county judge, consider to discuss and take appropriate action on the appointment or reappointment of a representative member of one alternative to the Transportation Policy Commission, HTAC, for 1-year term beginning January 1, 2022. I have been the primary on that. Commissioner Metz
move.
Has been secondary.
Judge Keogh.
We're willing to do it if you'd like us to do it again.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Thank you.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Emergency management. Jason, if you would, please.
Good morning, judges and commissioners. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Item A is $250,000 needed to continue purchase medical supplies. We have a number of requests for masks and gloves throughout county departments, cleaning supplies, sanitizer, things of that nature. The last time we came was for funds was in August. We are really close to reaching the limit on those authorizations, so I just didn't want to go over without coming back and getting further authorization. The funding source to come from ARPA for us to continue that project. So,
where are all these requests coming from, Jason?
The biggest one for the mask is going to come from in-house in departments, mainly the Sheriff's Department. We help them out a lot with masks as they have to put masks on inmates and for their own departments. Gloves, we get a lot of glove requests as well through that. We get first responder agencies across the county needing gloves as they interact with the public, including ourselves. And then the cleaning supplies and sanitizer stuff is in-house, usually with custodial or other departments that need sanitizer wipes to wipe counters up between customers and constituents coming. So,
much requests coming from the judges or the courts?
We get a little bit. The OCA sends a request from time to time. Mainly, they keep a stockpile in the courthouse for things like that, but it's not near as many going to the OCA as it was early on when they resumed operations once the Supreme Court let them get back to operation. So,
okay. Any more discussion?
Do we...
Go ahead.
How many do we have in our warehouse? Didn't we ask that question once before? Have we ever got that?
I have a lot of N95 masks that we pass out on a weekly basis to our first responding agencies and in-house departments. We're not using the N95 mask on the inmates. They're just not, they're expensive and they're one-time use. So the inmates and others are getting the surgical mask. They're cheaper to use. They have the same effective rating for what we're trying to accomplish.
But if we have a stockpile of these N95 masks that do have an expiration date at some point in time,
yeah,
we're not using them?
We've rotated out and got the expiration stuff done with our inventory clerk that the court granted us last year. We've been able to make sure the first product in is the first product out, so it's not sitting on the shelf and pushed in the back and basically dry rotting as it's expiring.
Have that inventory clerk come and give the court a brief on an update on what we have in inventory. What have we purchased? What is there? I mean,
as
literally say we have 912 bottles of sanitizer.
As they're working on that project, ounces. He's labeling, and you know, every item's getting a product code essentially and a barcode checked out and checked back in so we can track it. As that project's ongoing and we get near completion, we can bring an inventory to you guys and let you know what we have, what we don't have. If you haven't been in the warehouse recently, in the last 4 or 5 months, it's dramatic as things have moved out and we've not replaced some of that stuff. As we have no need for gowns and face shields and stuff as much as we did last year because the hospitals have all stocked up on that stuff now versus early on in the pandemic where no one can get it and we were able to get it in bulk. We've gone through that. So we've rotated a lot of inventory out and have made some space for the more useful items that we see a lot of requests of. So,
how hard are these items to attain? I mean,
on this list, not really hard. The hardest thing for us to get right now is testing supplies. Even the rapid tests that we have had, the Abbott antigen rapid test that we've used across the county, the state just can't get them anymore. We can't get them. They're on federal procurement. The feds are actually going to mail every household some of these tests here in the coming days. So the feds stockpiled and pretty much locked us out from getting those supplies for that project that they're working on. As a result of that, that's our biggest challenge is getting testing supplies at the antigen testing level. The PCR testing level is even worse because you got to have a lab attached to that. And we've never used PCR tests at the county level, but as an alternative, we wouldn't even be able to move to an alternative testing option because of the way it's just not feasible.
Where's all the testing taking place? Where are we doing all
this testing? The big mass testing centers that you see on the news from Harris County, those are federally supported testing centers. I don't even know where they're sending those tests, the samples off to be lab analyzed. I'm assuming they have lab contracts throughout the county, throughout the country for that. But they're bringing in federal supplies to run those sites. They opened one this morning. The closest one to us is in spring at the Ford Event Center. Yeah, Planet Ford Event Center. And their plans are to do 20,000 or 30,000 tests a day there, if need be. They have the supplies to do it, but they're all 3 or 4 day turnaround. With this particular variant,
by the time you find out what your results, you could be
correct. As I was going to say, as some of the constituents alluded to this morning, the symptoms are so mild. By the time it's detected, you're already in the recovery phase of it, and you didn't really have any severe illness.
But there are testing centers around. I mean, over in New Caney.
We've had some pop-up test centers with some private vendors that opened up in the county.
Yeah, okay.
And they still have 3 to 5 day turnaround on test results. It's a drag. That's why that rapid test that was became so popular in the middle of this from
are
Abbott.
Are we supplying those with the test?
So we have some of those in-house. They're very hard to get by. We use them in our departments to make sure, especially in our first responder offices, make sure our officers and stuff can come to work or return to work post-infection. But it's not something that we have in wide distribution. I probably have less than a couple hundred of those available right now.
I would feel more comfortable moving on this if we cut that maybe to 125,000, kind of just cut it in half. Come back, see where we are when that is.
That's fine.
Feel more comfortable. Yeah. We got the number, then voted on it.
We can wait and see. I'm fine with it as well.
I understand, and I'm not going to speak for the jail because I don't have a clue. But I'm sure the jail has to have a lot of masks, and I guess they're doing a lot of testing. I don't know if they do or not. I don't know.
I'm about like
everybody else. We've done all we need to do with it. We need to move on.
You can do an inventory and find out where we're at. By the time we get together next commissioner's court, just go do an inventory.
No, I already have that, Judge. I can present that information.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of stuff that we don't get requests for, and I have stuff that I have none of that I need. I can bring that to you guys in more detail, let you know specifically what it is. The half number would work because since August, I mean, we've used 250,000 since August.
I just want to make sure that the custodial crew has the cleaning supplies that they need. I'm all for, you know, wiping things down. I mean, that just makes sense.
I'm for that, and I'm for whatever the jail needs, because that's our biggest problem, I think, is the jail and custodial.
So maybe give
this other stuff
$15,000.
At least, and then I can come back in with it more inventory. Yeah.
Okay, sure. Riley, you good with $50,000 to get them?
You're going to run out before next court?
No, sir, not at $50,000. Not at all.
Do the inventory and bring it back to us on the next
court. Judge, I do have things I need to order now, like gloves and stuff. I'm going to need some funds.
Okay, are you guys good with
$50,000? I appreciate
that. That's what I'm asking. Yeah. What is it that you're out of?
I'm out of large and extra large gloves right now. I need to order them. Those I have lots of smalls and mediums.
How many boxes do you
need? Boxes?
Because I bet we have, Evan, 25, 50 at my office.
That would last about a day on the request.
At least come get them.
We can take them. We'll get them passed out.
That will last a day. Where is it all going?
Well, once an officer or someone has that, they're using them. We're not going to go track them down to get gloves from them to give to the next person. So if I give a box of gloves to somebody, I don't expect to get a box of gloves back from them. They're going to use them.
Look, I don't either, but I'm just 50 boxes of gloves in a day?
Yeah.
Amanda, didn't we have money put aside for emergency?
I'm going to go back to the $50,000.
Let me finish.
Yeah. Is that good for you, $50,000?
$50,000 gets us to at least give you guys an inventory and let you know what's going on before we request four. And to be honest with you, from August to now, we've used $250,000. We had a lot of expensive requests in August because of the Delta variant and stuff that ate some of that money, and it stretched for almost 5 months. $50,000 is going to get us where we need to be in the immediate to come back with an inventory and give you
we have a motion. No more than $50,000 to buy supplies that are primarily for the jail and custodial.
Yep.
And the funding source would be ARPA.
Yes.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
We have a second.
I'll second.
We'll get you guys a complete inventory. I'll come back next court.
Uh-huh. All in favor?
Prep that up for you.
Motion carries. Proceed.
So I have no ask on item B at all. This is an item I've used from time to time to be a presentation, what's going on. The wording of take appropriate action or immediate action is in the event that I say something you guys want to take action on, you have the ability to do so without us being outside of TOMA. As of this morning, these are cumulative numbers since March of 2020. Total positive cases is 108,956, and that's as of this morning. Again, that's cumulative since March. The percent positive of how these tests are working is actually the highest it's been thus far throughout the pandemic. 36.4% on the PCR and 20.4% on this antigen test. It's actually curving off, so it's rounding and leveling off, which matches some of the modeling that we've seen showing that peak is coming this week or early next week for this particular surge. And we've seen very little hardship effects from this surge. It's a very mild, if it is Omicron that you have a very mild case and not something that's an emergency, is going to run you into the hospital. We do have some hospitalizations, As a result of this, as of this morning, they had 249 in general observation rooms and 48 in the ICU. The ICU time is dramatically decreased from the other variants. We're seeing some patients in and out ICU in less than 5 days. Some are a little longer, but nowhere near the 60 to 90 days time frame so far. We're also not that far into this variant for us to have that data, but we're not seeing a lot of really sick people go in the ICU and stay with this new wave. We're still seeing some come in with that from other variants that are a little more strict, a little stronger. Also, the hospitals, I talked to some of them yesterday, they're seeing a number of patients come in for other issues that, as they're admitted, they're given a test and they're determined to be positive with COVID. So they are listed as a COVID patient in these numbers, the way the state reports numbers. They're not necessarily in the hospital, so to speak, because of COVID. So the other elements that brought them there. So we have dealt that. On the supplies front, we talked about testing being an issue, getting testing supplies. That's a huge issue. The therapeutics, the monoclonal antibodies, the judge continues to fight for that. As of this morning, we had 19 Sotrovab doses available for infusion. We have 3 or 4 times that appointments, so we'll handle as many as we can with doses we have. But with the feds putting that on allocation and restricting access to it, I mean, we get what we get from them as we can. Last week, we got 2 doses to last us a week for the whole county. So we just scramble every day between all the infusion centers in the state, reallocating supplies to at least keep that facility open. As more supplies come on hand, that facility, the state intends to keep it open because it's a regional facility, and we'll be able to go back to normal operations, getting folks infusion once we have wide access to supplies. Regeneron, which was very effective against Delta, we had 7 doses available this morning. It is not as effective against Omicron as it was with Delta, and thus the state and the feds have pretty much cut us off on access to that. And so even if you're a physician...
Here's the deal, though, Jason. If we're not doing sequencing, how do we know if it's Delta or Omicron?
That's correct. And so I was fixing to parlay into that. If your doctor was to prescribe an infusion and actually prescribe Regeneron, which we're seeing a lot of that now, we're unable to fill that in some cases because we don't have it and we can't order it. And our vendor with Dishes, the Department of State Health Services, who runs the infusion center, they don't even have access to order it because it's been cut off. So it's a big problem, and without sequencing, like the judge said, you don't know which variants you have and which variants you don't have, and it's kind of ridiculous that we're even in this predicament. But the infusion center from August to December before Omicron was an issue was extremely effective at lowering the hospitalization, did over 8,000 infusions there, and we saw hospital numbers drop almost immediately once it opened, and they stayed extremely low when we had access to that therapeutic. The new Pfizer pharmaceutical drug that was approved right before the Christmas break, the Paxlovid, as of this morning, there is none to have in the county. They had some last week. We've had a number of doses that were prescribed out, but as of this morning, there's none of that available as of right now. The feds are shipping that out us, but again, as of this morning, they had less than 60,000 doses nationwide to ship out, so we'll get a very small percentage of that in the next couple weeks until Pfizer can updo that. That was extremely effective for some people that I've talked to with using that drug and getting over the even the Omicron in fast order. So it may be another attempt with a therapeutic like the monoclonal antibodies to help us get over this and stop, as the constituent said, start treating the issue instead of band-aiding it. So
it's, yeah, well, I wrote that letter to the governor on the ivermectin and the Right to Try Act.
Yes, under Right to Try Act.
Where did all that end up?
So under the Right to Try Act, you still have the right to try that. It has passed FDA level 1 clearance. You're finding, and what I've heard just as recent as last night from people, with a doctor's prescription, pharmacies are still refusing to fill that prescription. Yes. And so that has become an issue. So they're having to pharmacy shop to find a pharmacist willing to
fill what?
To fill a prescription for ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, even with a doctor's prescription.
Some South American European countries, that's the only medicine that are using to treat COVID.
Correct.
Pretty interesting.
I recently got off a cruise. I was in Mexico. It's everywhere.
Stocked up?
Yeah. I didn't buy any, unfortunately, but it's everywhere. That's what they use down there. And they're willy-nilly free and wild, and you don't even talk about COVID. So
I wish we were that way.
Yeah.
I'm tired of listening, talking about COVID.
So,
Jason, I don't remember if it was Ms. Ferris maybe that had mentioned Montgomery County Public Health. If you could give her the contact information
sure.
for them. They run the website that she was speaking about. We don't...
Yep.
have anything to do
the
with
the employee that runs it's actually a Montgomery County Hospital District.
Yeah. So you can go to them. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, the Montgomery County Hospital District has a public information officer that runs all that for public health. So I'll make sure they have the information. They can reach out to them. We're in decent shape. I mean, as the judge has said many times, you know, the models said and showed us having 100,000 cases as of April of 2020, and here we are just at 109,000 cumulative in 2022. So we're doing really well. I do see the numbers rounding off with the testing numbers statewide. So if that's happening here at the local level, we should be seeing our peak this week and be out of this surge here by the end of the month. So,
all right. Okay. Item C, I'm going to move. Thank you for that, Jason.
Yes, sir.
Item C, I'm going to move that we defer this item as we look at new rules in ARPA. So we'll come
Sounds good.
To that at another time. All right.
Thanks, Judge Commissioner.
Thank you. Appreciate it so much. Constable, Precinct 4.
Morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
Item 13A is consider and discuss the purchase of one replacement vehicle for Constable Precinct 4 due to a mechanical issue and name a funding source. Amanda's come up with a great replacement vehicle plan for the constables, and this was one of two vehicles that we tried to make it last another year, and it just didn't.
So we do this out of, and we fund it out of what, contingency or what?
There is funding in contingency to cover it if that's where you guys wanted to pull it from.
Okay. Do we have a program?
What about the $1.2 million? Did we already spend that, Gilbert, on when we, I think it was $1.2 million. I may have those numbers wrong. For all the vehicles, we set that aside recently. $700,000. I stand corrected, sir.
Come up to the microphone, Gilbert.
I'm
please, if we're going to have a discussion.
Everybody else may hear.
Yes. The last I remember was the $700,000 we did for the mental health deputies.
I might have that confused. It's about a year ago. We're having difficulty getting vehicles. We're trying to get them anywhere we possibly could for law enforcement.
They got the Parkway Chevrolet. We were able to buy several. From Parkway.
Okay.
So, and we've received the ones that we ordered from Buckaloo.
All right.
And then what Rowdy and I are going to do, because I know it's going to take 6 months or more for him to get the vehicle that he needs. I have a black Tahoe with 2,500 miles on it that he, his team have looked at. We actually brought it here for him today. So we're going to give him that vehicle to have in his inventory, and then we'll just purchase a new vehicle and send it back to us.
Sounds good.
Does it have all the equipment that you need on it? Does it have all the equipment?
It's got
everything you need to go? You good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Good with it, yes.
Perfect.
So just so the Commissioner Squart knows, we'll effectuate a budget amendment moving funds into Commissioner Nowak's budget. We'll work with purchasing to make sure that when a vehicle is available, we'll go ahead and make that purchase.
Perfect.
Excellent. Very good.
That way you don't have
thank
to
you,
wait.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Good for you, Constable.
No, good for me. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Constable, thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Nowak.
All right, elections.
We need a vote. We need to vote.
I'm sorry?
We need to make a motion and vote.
What is there, I mean, you guys just, do we have to vote for him to be able to do that?
I move.
Second. For a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Right, now Amanda can make the
thank
budget.
You.
I don't think we would have had to. I mean, I think we could do a budget amendment.
Just for her to do it.
Yeah. Susie?
Good morning.
Item 14.
Please consider and approve the early voting locations and times for the March 1st, 2022 primary election.
Move. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Susie.
Amy,
motion carries.
On this item, is this not something that could be on consent? So she doesn't have to come in? Or is there a reason this needs to be on open?
Normally it's on consent, but there are two new locations on here because of redistricting.
I just didn't want you to have to be here for no reason.
Right, just in case there was a discussion about the new locations.
But thank you.
Thank you. All right, at this time we're going to recess the Commissioner's Court to convene public hearings. Public hearing happening in Precinct 4.
Consider the partial replat of a portion of Reserve B and a portion of Reserve A of Deer Trail Estate Section 1 to be known as Deer Trail Estate Section 1 replat. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to construct a roadway over a portion of Reserve A and B of Deer Trail Estate Section 1. The plat is not ready today. The notice has been mailed to the HOA. We have had a call expressing concerns. So is anybody here to speak about that?
All right. There's no one here today to address that,
and we
have
no
action to take.
Sure.
All right, then let's reconvene court. Human resources. Dodie?
Morning. Please consider, discuss, and take appropriate action extending the unused portion of COVID-19 sick time for employees to use for the COVID-related illness through June 30th.
A second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Dodie.
Thank you.
Appreciate it so much.
Let me ask you a question, Dodie. In the past, we have, I think the court made the decision not to bring forward 80 hours to new hires?
Yes, sir. We haven't done that since January of last year.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dodie. All right, this time we're going to dismiss to executive session. Court recess for executive session pursuant to one or more following provisions of the Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071 and 551.072.
And we're deferring B,
correct?
Yes, we're going to defer B.
Thank
you. And let's go ahead and dismiss, and we should be right back. Reconvene court from our executive session. There is no action to be taken at this time. And as we move forward, are there any citizens that would like to talk about anything else today? If there are none, is there anything miscellaneous we should discuss? If not,
move we adjourn.
Move we adjourn. Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Commissioner Riley, you have the dais.